Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's I was your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And we're joined by a special guest today, Tony Eastover, our host at Locked On Pacers. Tony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to be on the Suns show. First time, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Hey, appreciate it. We're talking today with Tony, continuing our series on in our second installment here. First, we had our DeAndre Ayton episode, but now we're going to talk with Mikal Bridges with Tony East here about Paul George and that comparison to Mikal Bridges. Because if you look here at the numbers, Tony, they look pretty identical for their rookie years. And Mikal Bridges, let's go through really quickly here, their per 36-minute numbers. Mikal Bridges averaged 10.4 points, 2.5 assists, 2.1 steals, and 0.6 blocks per game. And Paul George is at 13.5 points, 6.4 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.8 steals, and 0.7 blocks per game. The defense production is pretty much there, Tony, as far as block and steal percentages go as well. So just thinking more about this, I imagine you watched Mikal Bridges a little bit at Villanova over his career there. Just from the outside looking in, what's your initial thoughts on Mikal Bridges as a prospect?
Yeah, I really like Bridges, especially, you know, before the draft. It was talked about like the top seven or whatever. There was like a cutoff before, like the Miles Bridges, this Bridges, SGA tier. And I was pretty high on Mikal Bridges because the way the NBA is now, you got to like the defensive wing is such a valued thing. Like that's what I feel like the Pacers are missing from being, you know, the next level of team. Every team besides the Rockets, and even if you can't PJ Tucker, the Rockets have a wing who can just guard the best player on another team. And I feel like Mikal Bridges has the makings to be that guy, especially because he can be competent enough on offense to stay on the floor all the time, and competent sells him way short because he's been very impressive in the NBA. So he's a great baseline to be a very effective player on a winning team at some point.
Yeah, George is somebody who I think it's like the absolute high-end comp, especially to see the way that PG's continued to get better all the way into his late 20s here. So it's not a mirror image because these guys are very different age, but I think the early in their career, that comp, it makes a lot of sense. And not only from positionally, of course, and length and kind of prototypical physically the guy that you'd want in that spot, but also just kind of how raw each of them was to a certain degree. I think Mikal is coming into the league older than George did, and obviously had a lot of success in college, but is somebody who doesn't have playmaking really too much in his game. Didn't even really have to do that too much with all the talent they had at Villanova. More of a 3-and-D player even at school, and that's really been mostly his role here in the NBA. So what do you remember about the very beginnings of Paul George, and especially kind of just your initial reaction to kind of seeing the way his career progressed? And if there's any sort of comparison you can make to what you thought of Bridges last year.
Yeah, well, like a big draw to me is, you know, like to use Booker here. In PG's rookie year, he wasn't getting the ball very often. Like this, that was Danny Granger's team, right? It was Danny Granger and Darren Collison was even there then. It was like the beginning of the George Hill times, or the year before the George Hill times maybe. But like Hibbert was developing. Like they didn't really give Paul a ton of time. I think he only played like 20 minutes a game. I think Bridges is closer to 30 this year. But he was like kind of a raw lotto guy, but they were playing like Mike Dunleavy and Brandon Rush and Indy native Josh McRoberts on the wing a lot more. So PG didn't even play every game. He was probably the eighth or ninth guy in the rotation that year, depending on what you think of TJ Ford that year. So his rookie year might not be the best baseline, but like the Booker Granger comparison, not that they're like good comps of players necessarily, but just in that they had a lead ball handler in their way that made it so they were reduced as far down to like a spot up level as they could be is pretty interesting to me.
Speaking of Granger, I grew up in Indiana, as you guys know listening to the show, and I'm glad about Pacers guest on here to talk about the Pacers, just reminiscing for myself, because just Danny Granger, do you agree, Tony, if you put him in today's NBA, that a guy like Granger, who was like a 40% three-point shooter, averaged 25 points per game when he was fully healthy, he would have been an all-star or maybe a star overall.
Just top 15 player, easily.
Easily.
Danny Granger doesn't get hurt, and the Pacers beat the Heat in 2011 playoffs.
Totally agree. That brings back bad memories for me, because that was definitely the year for them. But focusing more on George himself, just as a player, his development, you see just his growth as far as aggressiveness from year one to year two. His points went up. Also, his minutes went up by 10 points per game, but you saw improvements from shooting. You also saw it in the free throw line as well. What was the big swing skill, you just as a rookie or a second year player, Tony, that stood out to you with Paul George and that you saw like, oh, like these sequences there, they popped off to you like, okay, this guy could be a star or a really good player in about 2 or 3 years' time?
Yeah, just like general, not like this sounds so lame, but just like keeping up with the game kind of stuff. You know, the rookie, like they say they're keeping up with the game more and more often, but you always see them be that step late on rotations and they foul more. Or, you know, on offense, they're a step slow and the pass hits them just off of where they could shoot from. You know, stuff like that, that they catch up that tiny bit more and all of a sudden they put it together and you're like, whoa, you know, and that was the lockout year, right? His second year was. So it was even weirder in that way. But as he started to step in, you know, he played every game that year. He didn't get hurt. He really stepped into like, oh, this guy's doing all the right things and being in the right places. But really, it was defense, too, where you could see that more often. Like his steals went up significantly. He was guarding pretty good players for the other team. I think that's where everybody's like, oh, man, like this guy could be a player. And then we all know what happened the following year with Danny, why he really made the jump. But year one to two was, you know, more opportunity and just keeping up with the game so much more made him look so much better.
The other thing that changed that second year, just looking at the stats there, just became a way better three-point shooter. Started taking a more 39%. That was his career high until his last season in Indiana. Oh, no, he had a 41% in there too, but that was really the year where it jumped off.
Yeah, that was only six games.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I'm like, oh, wait a second. That was the injury season. So what do you remember about his trajectory as a shooter and just like, looking more confident, taking them in more varied situations off the bounce, et cetera. Was it something that really was as dramatic as it looks just kind of going back through the stats?
Well, like, you know, being in the right spot at the right time, that's a natural growth of thing. George Hill, finally, I think that was the year he finally, I might've been wrong earlier. I think year two was the year he finally started. They just added some good players like David West, I think's first year was his second year on the team. Just a lot of opportunity stuff allowed him to be better, you know, getting open threes and not just like getting set up from other guys. It's like, okay, now you have all these other guys drawing attention. So now you have a chance to do some stuff off the dribble. And when you hit all of them, they're going to let you keep doing it. So just better players, more opportunity, all culminating together allowed him to really jump off there. And I feel like the Suns are at a similar time. You know, they're one signing away from having all this gravitas of other players that can allow Bridges to do his thing.
Yeah, you're going to drive Suns fans crazy talking about how growing point guard might actually help the rest of the team look a little better.
Look at the Kings, man. That's it right there.
There you go. Yeah, that's exactly. I think it's going to be huge, and we're already seeing that with Tyler Johnson this year, just these last few games.
Now, going over, just looking at his advanced numbers, Tony, with Paul George, just in his couple seasons, his steals and his block percentages just translate immediately, even in a low usage role. That's very similar to what Mikal Bridges is doing right now. So, the defensive impact for a guy like Paul George has been consistently an all-defense type of player. Just what made it so unique for that team in Indiana? Because from what I remember, they built that squarely around Paul George, but also the supplementary pieces like Roy Hibbert and David West and Frank Vogel's defense-first system. I mean, when you think of, that was only about 4 or 5 years ago, that system that Vogel ran was pretty outdated nowadays.
Yeah, I keep trying to draw as many Suns Pacers comparisons as I can, because there are actually a decent amount from 2010 Pacers to Suns right now that you could say, oh, like there's a very similar team growth pattern that surrounding Bridges and George as well. But this is where the difference is on the defensive end. The growth comes from, they just have some of the best defensive scheme coaches in the NBA. Dan Burke has been their assistant for forever now. And even when Vogel was the coach back then, Vogel even said, yeah, our defense, which was so good, you know, with Hibbert, George, everybody, our defense is so good because Burke is so good. And countless players come to Indiana and see their defense improve. You had Darren Collison, Tyreke Evans, Bojan Bogdanovic. McDermott went from worst defender in the NBA to like 10th worst defender in the NBA. So that's an improvement too. It's just like every player just gets better on D when they come here because Dan Burke is so good at teaching defense and getting everybody to buy into how the Pacers play. Now, a lot of that is contingent on them having a good rim protector. Lo and behold, Roy Hibbert takes off right around when Paul George's defense steps up, and he fit in so well that, you know, he could make a few mistakes and learn while Hibbert protected him, while also, you know, that stuff allows you to improve when you're that young. And lo and behold, he got so good so fast because of that coaching from Burke and having Hibbert behind him.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about the defense, especially because I think the one of the things with Bridges will be filling out his body. George obviously did that. But why don't we take a break here? I want to remind you guys really quickly, make sure that you are following at LockedOnNBAnet on Twitter, as Evan tells you about all the time. We have every host in the whole network synced onto that account. Tony, of course, as well, and Evan and I and people in every single NBA city bringing you the news as it happens. Go follow at LockedOnNBAnet and stay up to date on everything. I want to also tell you guys before we move on here about Homie. Homie is the fantastic new service that I have been preaching to you guys about for quite a while. And what they're doing is incredibly exciting. They're going to sell and list your house for just $1,500. That means that on average, Homie customers are going to save over $10,000. These guys recently sold a $1 million home in record time and saved that homeowner over $60,000. So it's a bunch of numbers, but think about how much money you typically spend on the extravagant realtors and commissions and fees that typically go into buying or selling a house. Homie cuts all of that out for you, makes the whole process a lot less daunting and something that's much more manageable to deal with. To learn more about my friends at Homie, I want you to text Homie, H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Alrighty, Tony, let's talk about George kind of physically. Let's really dive into his body. I want to just ask you what you remember, because he was actually somebody that I was going back through some of these comps, like I said, and from a weight perspective, the wiry Paul George that we saw coming into the league out of Fresno State, I think bears a lot of resemblance to Bridges. And I think the process for Bridges to become physically ready to handle the best players in the NBA night to night on the defensive end is going to come in a similar way for what we saw for George.
So physically, Paul George is unfair. He cheated. Did you know that? Because when he got drafted, he was the same height as Mikal Bridges is right now. And then he grew 2 inches from year one to year two. So he's 6'9 now, but he came out like 6'6", 6'7", about what Bridges is now.
All right.
And that height helped him a lot. And that's kind of unfair in terms of like projecting growth for a 22-year-old Mikal Bridges, because he's not going to grow 2 more inches. You know, that's not fair. At the same time, you can fill out your body. You know, you finally, that summer after your rookie year, have full access to an NBA gym, NBA coaching for the whole summer, and a workout facility the whole time. Like, there's no excuse not to fill out your body at that point, right? And every Pacers rookie ever comes into year two looking jacked, and everyone gets all psyched up about it, including TJ Leaf, who still hasn't done a whole ton with that muscle. But I think Bridges can follow that style of from year one to two. It's like, what is it hurting you to just be more filled out and be stronger in every way? Now you can explode through more contact. You can, you know, you're not going to get pushed off the ball as much with a forearm, stuff like that. That just is like basic help on the defensive end. It's just so low hanging fruit for improvement.
I feel like the one area we haven't hit on yet with Paul George is his playmaking ability. And it really started to take off for him in his third season with Indiana. Averaged a career high 4.1 assists per game. He's breaking that right now in OKC with 4.2 with his MVP run right now. But really looking at that ability, and we're really seeing that right now with Mikal Bridges too, over the past 20 or so games, averaging around 3.5 assists per game. What stood out with that aspect of Paul George's game? Because as a rookie, it didn't really show up that much, but progressively, as he got more minutes and more time within Vogel's system, he really got really a lot more trust from not only the coaching staff, but the players too, as far as playmaking goes.
So that's the year that Danny got hurt pretty substantially, and they had to rely more on George just to be the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands more, be the high usage guy. You can look at his numbers and say, okay, well, clearly you see a big jump in stats, but his usage went up pretty substantially too that year from the year before. As for his playmaking in general, a lot of good roster construction helped the Pacers that year. They had good shooters around him. They just had a really good team, and putting the ball in his hands more, just obvious. Like, I hate to be so reductive, because like playmaking is a thing that grows as you understand the game. But when your usage, I should just recite the numbers. When your usage jumps from 19.3% to 23.5% and then 28% the following year, you know, you're going to see those jumps in per game numbers when, oh, you just have the ball more all of a sudden. And he really took off that year when I feel like he got more and more opportunity and he got familiar with his teammates.
Yeah, hopefully the same goes for Mikal Bridges in that sense, because his usage right now is around 11%. But Burnham, what are we going
to? Let's hope that it happens with Bridges without a significant injury to the team's best player.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy how low that usage number, Evan. I look at it every so often. I like.
Wait, did you just say 11%? 11?
It's 12.3, it says on Basketball Reference, but whatever. I mean, it's been around 11, 12 all year. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, that is crazy. Yeah. Who's shooting instead? Aiden Booker and
Josh Crawford.
Oh, man. Wow, I just got sad for the Suns.
Yeah, well, he's someone, I think the reason Evan asks and the reason that we're interested to talk about PG is exactly that Bridges is not, he's just not a guy who has the ball in his hands a lot. Well, just, you know, he's a really, really just a shooter right now. He doesn't even, you know, we saw him in the post a little bit at Villanova. We saw him cutting. He does some of that, but it's really rare. So we're looking forward to hopefully his game filling out like that. And yeah, let's hope it doesn't take an injury to the best player. Let's hope that he can do it a little bit more reasonably. But what do you what's been your impressions of this season from PG? Did you ever think
this season right now
years ago that he could get this good?
Wow. Maybe at some point, like 2013-14, that was his second All-Star year when his usage was insane. And that team was so good. That was the team that got the Heat to 7 games. That was the year you're like, maybe this dude can be an MVP candidate. And then the injury happens in the summer the next year, and you're like, okay, never mind. This dude's never going to be that good because he's recovering from one of the craziest injuries ever. And he was still really good afterwards, but not quite that good. You know, it's like a peg down, if that's fair. So to see this happen, I don't want to call it out of nowhere, but not a contract year, you know, no roster change around him. Just all of a sudden he just makes this jump. It's been insane to see. And he's one of my favorite players to watch ever. So to see this explosion happen has been so cool.
What's really interesting with Paul George, and hopefully it doesn't happen down the road with the guy Devin Booker, was that he forced his way out of Indiana after 7 years, and instead of going to LA, he went to OKC instead in that shocking trade that got Oladipo back. But when you think of win-win trades, Tony, there's really, outside of Oladipo's recent injury, and hopefully he gets back to what he was beforehand, but before that injury, that was pretty much the cleanest win-win trade you could think of when you add in Domantas Sabonis as well.
I don't know. I think Lonzo Ball pick for Brandon Knight was pretty close to win-win, right?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to come on the Sun show and then make fun of the Suns? Is that me?
No, the Knight pick was that ended up being Mikal.
Oh, shoot.
Knight was the Bridges pick. Yeah.
Man, that whole day is just so confusing.
Yeah, and the Suns ended up, trading for it again. So it continues.
I can't keep up with the IT trade day. It's hard to find like win-win trades. Like I feel like in the 80s and 90s more, there were trades just made for like basketball reasons. Like we like that guy more than our guy for basketball reasons. And I think kind of in the Nurkic Plumlee trade, was that 2 years ago now? You know, it's kind of something like that where, I mean, obviously there were some assets involved and some malcontent with Nurkic, but it's just like Plumlee fits what we do in Denver more than Nurkic does, and Nurkic fits what we do in Portland better than Plumlee does. Let's make something happen here. And there's not really basketball trades anymore. I feel like the Oladipo PG trade is almost a basketball trade because, you know, you have to get a creator back if you're going to lose Paul George. Well, there's Oladipo, and he happens to be from Indiana. That definitely didn't hurt. And now you're getting, you know, this center / power forward at the time thought to be combo in Sabonis, who now is pure center. But anyway, but beyond like extracting assets of two young starters for Paul George, just getting like good basketball fits and culture fits was such a huge deal in that trade. And it's been such a win for both teams.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We were just talking about the PG trade. Now in like 3 seasons, Oladipo is going to be an MVP. That's how it works. That's how
We can, if you do trade Bridges for, gosh, who's going to be some like slightly younger guard from him? Like for like Malik Monk or something. I don't know. Yeah, in 2023, and then Malik Monk's MVP in 2026.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about the broader Pacers here, and I want to ask you about Miles Turner too. But again, let's take a quick break. I want to remind you guys, make sure you're using your smart speaker to check out our show. Or Locked On Pacers if you want to go check out what they're doing. Tell your smart speaker, play podcast, Locked On Phoenix Suns. It'll queue up the last episode for you and help you stay up to date with everything going on. The Suns might continue their win streak this weekend. You got to stay up to date. So whether you're in the car or at home, just holler at your devices and make them play our show for you. All righty, let's move on here to DeAndre Ayton. I want to ask you about Miles Turner. Not the most direct comparison, but I've been really fascinated by Turner's defense this year, turning up another level. And I'm just really fascinated in general by all those big men coming out of Texas. I'm a draft guy, and they just keep churning these guys out. And Turner was one of the early ones, and he's really continued to grow. What's been the difference for him this year on that end?
Yeah, he did a bunch of yoga and weightlifting. And yeah, man, I got to quit being obsessed with like the muscle watch crap because it doesn't actually mean anything. But he did a bunch of yoga.
One of the biggest ones that we've seen in a while, though.
It was. He got cut this summer. And the thought was, okay, well, Turner's already a pretty good defender. Now he's going to take over some offensive load. Well, he has harnessed all of this weightlifting and yoga into being just one of the best defensive players in the league. And he's sharp on his defensive rotations pretty much from every angle you can imagine. The blocks are just like a number to me because his rim protection is so good without it. Like, he's always contesting stuff. People are afraid to even shoot around him. I think the impact goes beyond like he's affecting shots and goes all the way to he's making guys not shoot at all and like pass out or do some reckless crap that doesn't work. And he can defend on the perimeter a lot better this year. He had two or three good possessions guarding Giannis last night. We also had five not good possessions guarding Giannis, but two or three is more than the zero he would have had in years past now that he can stretch out to the perimeter a little bit. And all these growth things that the natural growth of a rim protector is getting better at protecting the rim and tell your Rudy Gobert. Miles Turner said, I'm going to be good protecting the rim and stretching out a little bit. And that's been what's so huge for his defensive impact.
Now, let me talk to you really quickly, Tony, about Domantas Sabonis as well alongside Miles Turner, because I feel like not this year, maybe not next year, but maybe within the next two or three years, there's going to be a point where I think only one of them stays on the roster. Myself, I like Domantas Sabonis a ton. I think he's ripped or alongside Miles Turner as far as importance to the Pacers. But what side would you lean, and how's that going to play out, you think, the next two or three years for the Pacers with those two guys?
I hate having to pick a side. So I'll defer first. The goal, I think, is going to be, can they play together? Which sucks that Thad Young, who I think is the best player on the healthy player on the team right now, is going to be a casualty of young growth. But I think they're going to try, okay, can we start and play for 15 to 20 minutes a game, two centers at the same time? And that has worked this year. The first year, it was bad and a lot got made of it. But really, they were a positive year one when Lance wasn't on the floor with them. And every non-Lance stat makes me happy. Year two this year, their net rating is still positive, but it's in such short spurts of, you know, 5 to 10 minutes a game that you can't really say like, oh, we can start these guys and get away with it and be comfortable paying them. So I get what you're saying in that they might have to make a decision at some point between we can't pay a backup center, starting center money and only play him half the game. So my deferral is if in this postseason coming up, they get away with 10 to 15 minutes a game of those two on the floor and it works, and that's like their best or like one of their best five-man lineups has both of them out there, then yeah, I think you can keep both and trudge on in that way. But if it doesn't work, you know, what are you doing if you're not, you have, you know, Oladipo, a top 15 player, you're in postseason mode now. If you have a guy who doesn't help you in the postseason or can't be on the floor with your best players in the postseason, you have to get rid of one of them. I think regular season player Sabonis is better. As an, you know, just an offensive juggernaut, he can keep you rolling at all times. He's such a good screener and offensive player. But in the playoffs, when things slow down and get smaller, I think big men who can stretch the floor and play defense are more important, and that's what Turner is. So I think I lean keeping Turner in that way. But I can hear both arguments because Sabonis, when he's been healthy, has played better this season.
All right, staying in that front court, you mentioned Thad Young, a guy who I agree he's been impressive. Another guy who's just kept getting better over the course of his career and really doesn't get talked about a lot, but is just consistent, fun to watch, and made himself fit in the modern NBA when I wasn't really expecting that to happen. He just can stay on the court, and I think he brings a lot of the things that Ayton needs next to him, maybe as a stopgap. I know Young's somebody that Evan and I have talked about as a potential 1 or 2 year deal this summer, depending on how things go for the Suns. They need a power forward.
I like
that. Do you like that fit?
Yeah, I don't want to lose him. but that sure. I would like that for him. Well, for him this summer, he had a player option and he picked it up like the last day, because I think he expected, maybe not expected, but I think he anticipated an extension offer in the summer and it didn't come. And I don't know that that's created any rubbing. I don't think it has. He's such a good guy. He's a captain of the team, but I don't know that he'll necessarily have the Pacers back come free agency this summer, especially with the, like I just said, they might try to get the two bigs together. So he might be gettable for the right offer.
That's actually really interesting, because if Thad Young's available, he climbs right up to like the top of my list for power forward options next to Aiden. Cause like you said, his defense is pretty perfect next to him, but.
Oh, it's so good.
Also Bojan Bogdanović though. I mean,
you can't have him. Nope.
Talk about him for a minute though, because I mean, he's been not Oladipo 2.0, but I mean, he's filling up his role, so to say, and he's putting up over 20 points per game in his absence. I mean, at this point, for Kevin Pritchard, you got to pay him this summer, right?
You have to. You absolutely have to. Wings who can score like this are impossible to come by. And this is like so caught in the moment of me, but you know, I think you could play him at the four. I think you could have him be the leader off your bench. Like, he has become one of the better scorers in the league. And that's not the hot takey part. The hot takey part is if Oladipo gets hurt a month and a half earlier, I think Bojan could be like in the most improved player sweepstakes, you know, up there with Siakam and Fox. He's been that good over the last month and a half. He's averaging almost 22 points per game on crazy efficient splits and doing it without missing a, like, their record almost isn't missing a beat without Vic, just because Bojan has stepped up so much. I mean, he has been unbelievable.
Yeah, when you talked about all those guys who come in and get better on defense, and you listed him, but that's exactly where my mind went. Watching him defend LeBron in the playoffs last year was one of the craziest things I can remember, just with the high stakes of defending a player like that. For a relatively anonymous guy to be able to do that in a big series like that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, he just didn't suck. You know, and no one knows this guy. They're like, oh, you're going to suck defending LeBron, and he didn't suck, and that's huge.
Now, Brandon, unless you want to add anything after this question I have here, just as a general NBA fan, also being from Indiana, I've been saying this, and it's probably hot takey to some listeners, but coming into the season, I said the Pacers were a sleeper finals contender, because I thought
at the deadline, I thought
they were going to go after that Mike Conley kind of guy, and I think they would have until that injury happened with Oladipo. But what move do you think they have to make this summer, specifically at point guard, because I think that's the one move you have to make to upgrade that team significantly to a title contender alongside Philly and Boston, for example, and Toronto? What do you do? Do you go after a Kemba Walker free agency if somehow gets available, or do you go after a Conley again in the summer? What would you do if you're in Pritchard's shoes for that?
Yeah, I think the two things you need are point guard and wing defense. Like, as much as we just talked about how awesome Bojan's been, like I said earlier, you need a really good wing defender to make it really far. And Bojan, as good as he was on LeBron, man, this timing of the sentence is bad. He's not perfect, and they could get a much better wing defender. I think that would help them a lot. But point guard especially, you know, someone steady. Like, Conley is really the ideal fit. If he didn't have a massive contract and injury concerns, he would be on the team already. But, yeah, someone like Conley or even Kemba, but less so Kemba. I feel like he doesn't fit as well with Vic as Conley does. But, you know, Mike Conley's going to be available. On the off chance Jrue Holiday gets traded away, I think they should jump in all over that. Something like that, I think, is the next step for them in upgrading. I agree with you.
Brian, anything else you want to add on here?
No, that's all I had. Thanks, Tony.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Okay, good. So I referenced the Kings earlier, who went from terrible to very competent because of De'Aaron Fox going from bad to good point guard. And it is, I've always said in my head that if you have a competent point guard, your team will always be at worst decent. And the Suns, you know, I don't want to get into the GM crap of not getting one, but I think the Suns are right there, where if you get that point guard, you know, Ayton looks pretty good on both ends. Booker has been banged up this year, but he could be better next year. You've got the defensive guys. You're the point guard away from being at least a decent team. Who do you want to be the starting point guard next year?
Ooh, I'll go first here. And I think
on the spot,
me and Brendan might have the same answer, to be honest, and it's Jrue Holiday. I think he's pretty much the perfect guy you want next to Devin Booker. And
yeah, I agree.
I think that if you had Booker and Holiday and throw in Ayton and Burgess in there too as well, maybe Kelly Oubre stays around for street free agency. That's a team after that too. And if they somehow get Zion Williamson out in the process out of that too, my goodness.
Oh man. Yeah, it's true for me too. Yeah. I think he's like a guy where the minute he's available, the other 29 teams call. He's just so versatile and so good and plays both ends and isn't super expensive. I mean, he's on a pretty much a max, but he's good enough for it. So if he ended up in Phoenix, I think a lot of their problems go away, like you're saying.
Follow-up question. You don't get pick one. Do you pick Morant or do you trade back?
Oh.
I would trade it.
I would also trade it. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I would trade it too. And I think for a top three pick that Morant would be, I think you'd get back a Holiday or a Conley type of guy for that.
I'm with you. All right. Yes. Yes. I am. All right. We should all be the GM of the Suns. We got this.
There's going to be an opening, I hear.
Well, what was it? Did you hear all the Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons stuff about them running the Suns? That was pretty
fun. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they need someone.
We're gonna be better than Zach and Bill Simmons running the Suns.
They would probably interview us at this point.
Hey, Robert Sarver, if you're listening to this, this whole podcast was our interview. So if you want to listen to this back and consider us for the GM position, that would be greatly appreciated. But that'll do for today's podcast, guys. Appreciate listening in. And before we go, Tony, do you want to plug anything as far as Locked On Pacers goes or your personal content?
I tweet out all the shows. I retweet all the shows myself. So if you want to follow Pacer stuff and the show at the same time, you can follow me on Twitter at TEastNBA. I know it's nerdy that I have NBA in there, but it's all I tweet about. So it's going to stay.
Hey, no problems on that. We also have some NBA on our staff. Dave King has his and his Twitter account. So there's definitely a lot of NBAers around, and that's not a bad thing. We're all a Twitter community, so it's fun to have you on, Tony. Appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, thanks.